This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits.
Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, here we are. It's the first show of the year at City
first
Limits.
Show.
Yes.
2026.
And Maxwell getting excited over there on Kevin Healy. City Limits, another round. I don't know how many years now, 30 or something. Today, it's been the first Wednesday of the month. It's Transport Day. We'll be talking to John McPherson in the second half of the program. He's our regular commentator on transport issues. And
Do you think people missed us while we were gone?
Well, I'm sure not. they're probably thinking, oh, God, they're back. He's back or something.
Sorry to say, folks, you've got another year of Kevin.
That's right. But in fact, you know, I always say this day every year, because people come back from breaks on radio, these radio people, and say, you know, it's great to be back. And I think, what crap, they'd rather be out on holiday and, you know, enjoying themselves. But anyway, they're not.
Yeah. This is the honour show, this one.
That's right, yeah. Anyway, here we are, and it's City Limits, and I'm going to talk about a few things today before we go to John. There's a number of course, quite a lot happening in transport.
I imagine you've got quite a pile that's piled up
well,
over the month.
Yeah, and of course, since almost, I think it was just happening, but certainly since we had the last transport program, we've had the Westgate Tunnel open, and we've had the city metro system open, so there's plenty to talk about
in
those areas.
All the big things going on.
And apparently the metro system packed up yesterday, which we'll talk to John about. I don't know. I was looking for it in the Herald Sun. There's no mention, but I was on the news this morning that there'd been a problem at Armidale, but it meant they had a whole train, so they couldn't go through the metro, so that's a problem.
Getting stuck in the ground somewhere.
There was two trains they held up that couldn't go through because of they were worried about electricity problems. So people were stuck on two trains around Malvern or somewhere for a couple of hours.
Oh,
before they cleared it up. Yeah. Want a cup of tea, by the way? That's
I need a drink.
That's right. Here we go.
To start off with.
Yeah. Right.
Wonder if the aircon still goes on when you're in the trains like that. After a couple of hours.
Yes, good question.
If it gets a bit sweaty.
Particularly if they were turning the electricity off to
that's
to
right.
fix it. Now, do you want the one with the dotted dots and things or the one with the flowers?
I'll go flowers, thank
flowers,
you.
Flowers, right
it's
here.
It's very there hallmark, that card.
There you are. Okay.
There.
Right, there you are.
Thank you.
Now, also, while we've been away, the capitalist system, of course, continues on its merry way. It doesn't take a break because, it doesn't take a break because it can't. It has to keep making money.
It's on auto.
Have a sip of tea there. but it's interesting that Boral, the big concrete company, a few years ago, in fact, the head of Boral won the Financial Review's Business Person of the Year, mainly for the fact that he took on the unions and crushed them, and so he was praised for that. Well, they're still trying to do it. Boral has made an offer that its workers can't refuse, its truck drivers. It's offered them new conditions, which lower terms and conditions, so they actually reduce terms and conditions. But then they've told them that if they don't accept them, they'll get the sack.
Have they not noticed the cost of living going up?
No, cool. Well, they have to pay it themselves. They have the properties to go for that.
Poor things.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, poor things. Anyway, Boral threatened them with, when I say the sack, I don't mean that. I mean they'll be sadly having to be let go, which is...
Let go.
Yeah, that's right.
That's more gentle.
Right. And the bloody evil union, the transport union, has taken it up and says, well, let's see how bad the union is. The union said... and this is just absolutely disgraceful. Telling your drivers you'll sack them if they don't accept lower terms and conditions is clearly a Hobson's choice and it's unacceptable, Michael Caine, the secretary, said. But in fact, we've realised how bad it is because Danita Warne, who's head of the Master Builders Association, she said that if they were allowed not to lower their wages and conditions and sack them, then this would open up a Pandora's box for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad it is. That is how bad it is. Yeah. And in fact, Borrell said it was working. Now this is its justification. To modernise outdated contract determinations and move to an industry standard approach for drivers, using a model that incentivises uptime and productivity.
Wow.
Now, what a commendable target. And they're being thwarted by their workers. Thwarted by their workers. I mean, the only way you can obviously incentivise uptime and productivity is slash wages, conditions, and
works every
sack
time.
Them if they don't take it.
Works every time.
Every time. Every single time.
I love the way modernise equates to exploit now. Modernising, we're going to increase our exploiting. That's great. Redefinitions.
That's it. Well, flexibility is the key.
Flexibility
and productivity are the key. That's right. That's what you've got to have. And Cleanaway, which has been on this program many times, not specifically.
we haven't had them on.
No, actually. We have actually invited them, but they refused to come on for some silly reason. But they're, of course, been the target for a long time of the toxic waste dump at Tullamarine, which Helen Vandenberg, one of our regulars, talks about quite regularly, and they just have refused it for years to clean it up properly, and it's causing major problems in the community and in the waterways of the western suburbs. And Port Phillip Bay, ultimately. And they've also been done a number of times for safety things and having trucks that were unsafe. And they got done a while ago, a few years ago, for having scales that weren't quite correct but did favour them in terms of weighing things.
The thumb on the scale trick.
Now, it turns out that 9 workers on Cleanaway sites have died in the last 3.5 years. Another one over the break in mid-December, another worker was struck by a truck in a Cleanaway facility. But the board got pretty tough. Yes, the executives have had their bonuses cut by 30%. Mm. So the poor bloody CEO has had his bloke called Mark Schubert. His take-home pay for the year was cut back to $4.2 million, poor man.
Oh,
yeah.
That must have been quite a blow.
And we're assuming his office is in his counting house office. He doesn't have to go out and risk being killed and injured, because they also pointed out there's not only deaths but lots of injuries. So that's quite serious, actually.
What's
I mean, Cleanaway, it's
there?
Quite disgraceful.
Yeah. Mm.
And one wonders why there hasn't been stronger action by governments and things about what they're doing, because clearly they're not good.
Something for the government to look into.
But apart from Borrell's wonderful idea, you'll be pleased to know that a mob called U-Turn, which claim they're a not-for-profit youth homelessness service, but they've found a perfect solution to equal pay problems. Perfect solution.
Okay, what is it?
Well, no, this is true, they have. The women on the staff, their women, complained that they were, in fact, getting about 10% less than the men.
Wow. This day and age.
Yeah, in this day and age. So but U-Turn sorted it out.
I can guess.
Yeah.
Oh,
what
dear.
Do you reckon? What
oh,
do you reckon?
Dear. I have a feeling.
Yes,
somehow.
Go on. Yes.
We've either gender reassigned all the guys or we've lowered their pay rates.
We've slashed the workmen's pay by 10%. That's right.
Well done.
So now they're all equal. The only trouble here is, again, the union's taken them to court over it.
Oh, oops.
The men are a bit upset, because that means they actually lost, I think something like 10 grand each or something. I think it was about 10 grand. Yeah, they were reduced from 101 grand to 91 grand, the men. Back to so.
Well, now we know the guys are going to be fighting extra hard.
That's right, and it went to court, and the court ruled that the blokes had been treated pretty badly, and it's currently in negotiation. But anyway, I just thought that was an interesting one.
Yeah.
So it does
that's
solve
creative,
the problem, isn't it?
Creative thinking,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yes, of course. Next week, the Israeli president. The Zionist Israeli president Isaac Herzog arrives here, and I think it's it certainly was a mistake to invite him, because there's no doubt there's going to be massive protests. And yet our Premier, or government, of course, but also here in Victoria, Jacinda Allan said she hopes he does come to Victoria. I think he is. And she looks forward to meeting him, and the police will support the Australian Federal Police to ensure community safety and security, which means they're going to get really rough on protesters.
Yes.
But it's just a disgrace that someone who has been named both in the International Court and in the report by the that group last year around the word genocide is being invited here as a guest of the government.
Used to wonder how it could happen, and now we get to watch it in real time.
That's right. And just in terms of understanding, one of the richest men in Australia, I think you're probably aware, is Harry Trigubov, who's one of the biggest property developers in the country.
Harry had slipped my radar.
Yeah, he's been up there for years. He's based primarily in Sydney. But he's come out also and says that anti-Semitism is terrible, etc.
Oh, okay.
But in the course of it, he then said that sales of his business were not going as well. They were doing well, he said. But he said times were tough. People are really struggling. They do not have enough money, he said. Now, I would have thought a man of Harry's ability, with billions and billions of dollars personally, could think a way through why people might be able to get enough money, but he obviously couldn't think that one through.
The contradictions, Kevin, the contradictions of good old profit-seeking.
Yes, and we've had a visit here this week. She only flew through. She came and went because she's so busy she has to get back. The CEO of Citibank, the big American, of course, banker.
Uh-huh.
She was here, but she's embracing AI, and she says, you have to get rid of staff to make things work, and she's really into business and knows what to do exactly. It's quite good. And I bring this up because, I thought it might as well. I've mentioned this before, but probably not for a long time. During the break, we also, of course, commemorated, certainly not celebrated, but commemorated Invasion Day.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1988, the bicentenary in Sydney, which was quite an amazing event, really. I came back from that quite positive, feeling really positive, and then I think things... Mm-hmm. I certainly was over-optimistic, put it that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Sunday we got there to Sydney, and there was a wonderful concert at Bondi, which which Gary Foley, I think, was co-comparing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many people there, you kept going in and out and letting people in, and you'd go down the beach and you'd come back. And then Monday, Lady Macquarie's Point, which was where the Black Tent Embassy or the Tax City was, they set up for the bicentenary, which is right, close to the Opera House. And we went up there on Monday, and there was real anger, and you knew people were going to be angry next morning because the reenactment of the First Fleet was coming in first thing in the morning. So again, we went back, my partner and I went down there first thing on the next morning, the 26th itself, for the First Fleet to come in, expecting this massive anger. But when the first ships came through the heads, the place just went totally silent. It was like they were watching watching the invasion all over again, and were left sort of speechless. And it wasn't until they came parallel to us that a couple of young blokes, with painting and ochre and things in canoes, peddled out to it, and people started making noises, but they were just sheer silence. But I raise that because the first invasion was clearly British, but the second one, July on 1988, the first two ships that came in, the first two had the masks had ads on them, so you don't waste space. Ads on them, and the first one said Coke. And the second one said City. See, that's the connection to City.
Okay, here we go, the Citibank connection.
And I thought, well, the first invasion was British, but this one is American. Okay. And it's so appropriate for Australia, isn't it, that it's American.
It says so much. They are symbolic moments, aren't they? So, yes, every moment counts. I can just imagine that silence when you're just understanding the implication of everything that followed the first time around.
Yeah, you want to top up? I'm topping up my tea here.
Yeah, so I'm going well on mine. Thank you. What kind of tea is it today?
It's jasmine today. Jasmine. Only jasmine, yeah, so that was that, and it was a it was quite a the march in the afternoon was quite spectacular. It was quite wonderful. Yeah. But that was just
there have been some positive moments, haven't they, that make you think maybe things are changing.
Yeah, there was a lovely moment the next day. Actually, we were heading down. On the way back, we bush camped our way back down the coast and back through Cairn River and back to Melbourne. Took a few days.
Nice.
And I was in the people would be surprised to hear this. I was in the Glebe TAB the next day, and sitting in the door, slumped in a chair, was an Aboriginal woman, middle-aged Aboriginal woman, and looking totally out of place. You know, looked like she didn't mean to be there, and presumably her partner was in there somewhere doing something. And as I walked out, she was sitting there sort of looking at the ground and not feeling part of it, and I walked out. As I walked out, I said, "Were you there yesterday?" And she looked up and said, "Yes." And I said, "Wasn't it wonderful?" And her face just lit up. It was quite extraordinary. Yeah, yeah, it was just, it was this massive change in her personality.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that was
just that.
Just
that recognition. Yep.
Yeah.
Moments of recognition.
Now, also, you'll be pleased to know, in terms of pollution in this place, Victoria, we know that data centres use heaps of electricity and heaps of water, and they're not particularly good for the environment.
Right.
But they're going up at a great rate.
Yes, we are the second highest country for that stuff, aren't we?
Isn't it wonderful? Mm. And Victoria is going a step further now.
Okay, yes, let's go for it.
Yes,
Victoria?
Yes, yes. We're going to reduce regulations to allow them to allow more to come in. And Danny Pearson, our Minister for Economic Growth and Jobs, said that he aimed to attract new investment with this and would keep voters on side by managing the sector's increasing demand for water and power. I don't know how. So they're going to less regulation for them, and they can just come and do what they like with our water and take our power and everything else. Now, unfortunately, in the iconoclastic department in relation to this, because we all know that we have to have all that power and we have to, gas and coal we must have. And during the break, in fact, there's been more and more extension of coal mines and gas product and everything else, the whole pollution box and dice.
You look away and you look back again.
Do indeed. But there's a mob called the Superpower Institute, which has a different point of view. And they've written an article, this is terrible, which says we need to make polluters pay for their pollution.
No.
Yes, yes, they say.
What kind of a crazy mob are these people?
Oh, they're out of their minds. A polluter pays principle means those who impose climate costs will face them directly.
Direct accountability and consequences for your actions? Never.
It's a disgrace.
I think you should be able to pass it on to future generations.
We are. We are indeed. Now, you'll also be upset to know, because we had, of course, yesterday the interest rate cut and interest rate increase.
Yes. Wrong
you got
way.
A comment on that, by the way, seeing you're our economics guru around here.
Well, after a big eye roll.
Yeah.
I was like, why are they doing this? And then I have to say, I don't know if you've heard, this is a great story, but Powell's getting rolled by Trump. And so he's the chairman of the Fed Reserve in America. Yeah. And one of the things Trump used against him was...
He's a terrible man. I heard Trump say that. He's terrible.
He only appointed him like last time around.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve has run over their costs on their renovations.
Mm.
Trump didn't like that.
No.
Ballrooms notwithstanding.
Mm, that's right. And Rose Gardens going and everything else. Yeah.
Well, apparently the Reserve Bank here in Australia is running over its budget on its renovation.
Oh, dear.
So I think Albanese's got some ammunition there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've been losing money for a long time. anyway, I don't know how you make money as a Reserve Bank in the first place, but anyway, I call them the Reserve Losses Bank in the week that was. But anyway,
going up with your interest rates, please don't do it, but they do. And all it's going to do is hurt the average Joe. And they're saying inflation's gone up. I'm sure that the raising of interest rates is not going to do anything to...
No, and who puts the inflation up? Who puts the prices up? The capitalist system anyway. And then they say, well, we know it's going to hurt people, but it's for the good of the economy. So the economy is more important than people, obviously. Yeah.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course.
Than ordinary people.
We must worship at the feet of the economy.
Some people are important in the economy, but ordinary people aren't.
No. And the banks can win either way, so they don't care.
Yeah, well, that's right. Unfortunately. Oh, they get you coming and going, yeah. Well, the big employer groups, including our old favourite, the Australian Industry Group, which, of course, is our old mate Innes Willicks, they say that that inflation is stifling private sector growth, so we need... That's why we have to get inflation
stifling.
Down.
Stifling, okay.
But also... They have also urged a $50 billion spending cut by government because that's also hurting business. It's affecting business investment. And they, you know, they're at least they're balanced in terms of what they want to cut. They say we need $52 billion. That we need to save money on the National Disability Insurance Scheme because, people with disabilities don't contribute much to the economy, do they?
Right.
Childcare, aged care,
health.
Cares.
Yes.
Yeah, get rid of those. They also mentioned defence, though, which I found surprising. They say the NDIS, childcare, aged care, health, and defence. Now, I don't know where defence got into that because
that's unusual. The others might balance that out a bit, I think,
because you don't want to spend too much money on childcare, on the elderly, on health, those sort of things.
That's completely the wrong direction, isn't it? You don't want to put money into the economy on things that people need and therefore keep people out of
it's
debt.
It's clearly going the wrong way.
Oh. Who was saying that?
That's just the big business lobby.
Oh,
that
the
was
business lobby.
Okay. Yeah. Who else?
And it's funny, isn't it? Because any money flowing into the economy is going to be good for business. But anyway.
Yes, and of course you get. He's called independent economist Chris Richardson. He's one of the ones I love.
Yes.
He always
yes.
ones that come
yes.
up the regular economists, yeah. And he estimated that every $7.5 billion to $10 billion cut from annual government spending had the potential to remove the need for a rate increase in the short term. So we could have got around it by slashing government spending. And but no.
Not so sure about that.
And John McPherson's back on again for another year. John, I don't know how many years it is, but it's a lot. But there's never any shortage to talk about on transport, unfortunately. John McPherson, our regular commentator. And John, I don't know if you're... have any knowledge of this, but yesterday there was apparently a major breakdown which caused the new tunnel, the new metro system to be put on hold. It just didn't work for ages, and people were held up in a train for a couple of hours around Melbourne somewhere. I don't know much detail of it. Do you know much detail of it?
Well, I've been fossicking around. The Age had absolutely nothing to
no,
say
no,
about
it. Neither did the Herald Sun. I looked at it, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think
it was on the ABC News this morning. That's what I heard.
I think the Herald Sun might have had something, but I've just been, fossicking online to try and find something. But, well, it seems to have been a fault in the overhead wires and the trains, two trains got caught in that section. And we're sitting there for well over 2 hours with no power to the trains, which means, with modern air-conditioned trains.
Yeah, no air conditioning.
Wasn't working. And, of course, the doors, you can't open the windows or the doors. So it was really pretty horrible for the people on board the trains.
Yeah.
And that was happening, on the second major day of operation of the system, new system, the new line. So... for all their testing, they still ended up with a major fault on day two of the operations, which is not a good look.
And it affected, obviously that line now runs from beyond Dandenong, Cranbourne area, through to Sunbury. So one assumes that the Sunbury line wasn't running either during that period.
I think they were disruptions.
Were they shuttling?
I think they managed to get that section running much sooner than the other end because, you know, the trains to Cranbourne and Pakenham got you know, completely shut down because of this fault. And they ended up disembarking people off the trains. And the only way they could do that was via a ladder at doors at the end of the train. So people had to shuffle, hundreds of people had to shuffle through the carriages to the end carriage and then down a ladder one at a time and then walk to the nearest station.
Well, that should encourage people to use public transport.
That's really sad. It suggests to me that they hadn't overhauled all the overhead wiring for this line when they were putting this whole new thing together, where they're using a new kind of train, and running this G-Wiz high frequency service with the new special signalling as well. So, you know, what can I say? It seems like they didn't thoroughly renovate the overhead wires at the same time as they were doing all this other stuff.
It also means that if you get a problem like that somewhere along the line, it holds up the whole system.
Yeah. Well, that's right. But because this line is now operating with different trains and different signalling to the normal system, even though there are four tracks on the line through Malvern, between the city and Caulfield, they weren't able to, divert trains onto the other tracks because everything's been sort of isolated. And there's some logic to having each of the lines sort of operating separately to the others. But there's also some logic to having operational flexibility so you can divert trains when things go wrong.
Well, given that it was, I think, at Armidale's where it happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Was the Frankston line able to operate?
Yes, because they were on the other two tracks. So Frankston lines, I think, were able to continue. But, of course, there would have been a problem with people walking along tracks to stations.
Mm.
There would have been an issue about whether you could keep the Frankston line trains running.
Yeah.
So
also,
close to the people down on the ground.
I mean, it's a rough terrain to walk on as well.
Oh, it is, yeah.
And one assumes that people with mobility difficulties would have had real trouble.
Getting them off the train.
Getting off and then being able to walk to the nearest station.
All that. It's not a good look this early in the piece.
Well, that was one of the things we're going to talk about this morning, obviously, but this early in the piece. But yesterday, of course, shows that there are real problems. But other than that, what's it looking like, John?
Well, it appears, if we put aside that major, that's a major incident. It's more than an incident. It's a breakdown.
It's a disaster.
It's a disaster, thank you. it seems to have been going pretty well. People have got to learn new patterns, and of course some people are going to get a much easier trip and other people are going to have to discover that they've got to transfer trains along the way, whereas in the past they've been able to do the whole trip with one train. So there's some winners and some losers. And the hope is that there's far more winners than there are losers. But once you start getting a more complex metro system, you do find that everybody finds that they have to do interchanges. And the only way to make interchanges less painful is to make sure the frequencies are high so you don't waste much time waiting for the next train. And that's something they have introduced on the new line is high frequency,
But it's high frequency, but if you come off, it's high frequency going onto it, but if you come off it and want to go on another line, that's where you might run into the high frequency problem.
Well, I can see a hint of the upfield line problem.
Well, also in there, Kevin. Yeah. There was also a report that the Hurstbridge line, I think it's 40 minutes or something. They get, I mean, it's just
on the outer end of the Hurstbridge line.
It made me think that upfield's looking good. There's also a report in The Age which talks about how some people can use it to save time by switching, going to Footscray, for instance, and getting onto this system, and you can save things, that sort of stuff. But they said, the story said, the government will try to improve services everywhere else. Upfield and Craigieburn have also been promised timetable improvements later next year. That's this year now, because this was last year.
Yep.
With trains to run at least every 20 minutes all day. Now, I thought on the upfield line, which bit of a 20-minute service is an improvement on a 20-minute service?
Well, that's right, Kevin. You're being a bit lawyer. You know, being a bit like a lawyer there, aren't you? You know, you're complaining that no improvement can't be.
My law career didn't last long, John, but I can work that one out.
Yeah. Well, this goes back to one of my issues all along, which is why not fix all the lines that need fixing, all the suburban lines that need fixing, and the upfield's one that needs the top end of the upfield line. It's only a few kilometres, and the space is there to make sure the double track goes all the way to the terminal.
We should explain to people that one of the problems on the upfield line of running a better service is that up the top end, the last two stations, it's a single line, and so they have got a turnaround. That's right.
That's right, and it would not be a big project to fix, but for some reason this government particularly seems to be allergic to doing anything for the inner suburban voters. Perhaps because they've got a silly possibility that they'll vote green. I don't know, but you know.
Well, I'd certainly vote to put the money they plan to spend on level crossing removals into upgrading the line at the top end and making the Sydney Road trams accessible for people. That's
and
better spending.
They have got a plan to finally fix the finally do some level crossing removals on the upfield line, but it's in a couple of years' time, and it'll be quite comprehensive, but you know. At the same time, to not fix that top end of the upfield line is just bizarre. You know, it seems like it's something allergic that they can't. You know, I don't know. They're just it's ridiculous. So where were we? Before we got off into the upfield line,
we're still on the tunnel, the metro, and what's going on.
It seems to be working pretty well, except for yesterday afternoon. And of course, it was a hot day.
But that's only 2 weeks into it, John. That's
yes, that's right. It is going to work quite well, and the stations look very pretty. The Arden station looks a bit peculiar. It sits out there in the middle of a bare paddock. It was supposed to be surrounded by a precinct full of medical stuff, but then they decided they didn't have the money for that. And so at the moment, Arden just sits there looking rather like a shack.
Indeed, the Age had a story about that recently. Mm. It said the Metro Tunnel's new Arden station in North Melbourne is open, delivering world-class transport infrastructure to a postcode home to, well, not much. Yeah. Or as local Mary Masters, committee member of the North and West Melbourne Association, puts it, you walk out of the train station and into a paddock.
There you go. Yeah, perhaps they could make it a park for a caravan park or something like that.
They say outside the station you're met by stock feed warehouses, B-double trucks, industrial plants and dumped mattresses. A barren expanse of weedy gravel lies behind industrial fences.
Well, there you go. Sounds very Melbourne.
Yeah. So, but they do say, yeah, there's plan. But yeah. Apparently a number of people who've planned to put developments there yes. are backed off for whatever reason. So
well, I think they were told. I mean, I think the government told the medical functionaries that, no, you're not going to build your improved things there. I was never quite clear why. So it's looking a bit bare. But... apparently it's working quite well. We keep saying that.
Mm, well, John, I had my first little go on the, just in the city area, just going in from the new town hall station out to Parkville. Yep. Mm. And I think one of the things I was noticing is how long the escalators are. Like, if you've got vertigo, yes. you're not going to last very well.
They're longer than the ones at Parliament, which everybody used to think were very long.
Well, they are very long, yeah.
Yeah, and they go faster, I think, too.
Oh, hallelujah.
Although they put the speed is adjusted at various times of day, of course.
Right.
And I've heard that they slow them down for peak hour.
That's smart.
They slow them down, perhaps presumably because they're busier, but that's when you need the capacity. Mm. Presumably you get more capacity if you speed them up.
Right.
So I've never quite understood that changing speed on the escalators, but that's been something that's happened across the Melbourne system for the last couple of decades.
And speaking of having to learn new habits, I have to learn not to stand in front of the door where no train's going to pull up.
Somebody did point out it'd be a good idea to put a permanent sign on the doors which aren't being used because the platforms are a lot longer than the trains at the moment.
Right. Yeah, so we all got herded up the platform.
Yeah, well, that's right. There was staff to herd you, was there?
Yeah, still staff herding people.
I mean, I'm just interested that there was staff at all.
Oh, well, that is the city, right?
Yes. Well, that's... And so what was your overall impression?
Once you learn it, it's pretty complex getting from one line to the other. But once you learn it, if you're commuting, if you're new to the thing...
Yeah.
I think if you're a visitor to the city...
Yes.
Yeah, you might need those staff, hopefully, if they stick around.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Well, the quite long walks from getting from, say, Flinders Street Station to Town Hall Station, I would have thought.
Yeah, that's what I was noticing. So you sort of just follow the crowd and hope you're going in the right direction.
Well, one impression I've had is that the signage is could be more frequent and could be perhaps in larger signs too.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Not enough arrows. A bit far between arrows.
Yeah. Well, to me, that's more important than what everything looks like. But you seem to, I get the feeling that the aesthetics get in the way of the practicality of these things.
Yes, maybe so. And even like some arrows on the ground, you know, just like, or something. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to raise a thing that happens in, I think it's Paris or it might be London too. There are actually coloured lines on the ground.
For the lines. That would make sense. Yeah. Just colour code it all.
Once you learn what, you know, if the line's got a colour code, which is quite often the case, you can just follow the line. Lead you roughly in the right direction. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about Melbourne here, John. I mean, this is...
Oh, I know we are.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Now, any more on that one? Because the other opening, of course, has been the road tunnel. Have you more to say on the other one or first before we go on? Or
not really. I think you know, it looks to me like design has overwhelmed practicality a bit in the signage and things like that. You know, because too many signs gets in the way of appreciating the wonderful design. But it should be the other way around, in my view.
You mean convenience for people, John?
Oh, that's right.
Good God.
The road tunnels and the metro road tunnels open as well. Apparently was very quiet the first few days, But I think that yesterday they had a great, there were great stuff-ups on the road system yesterday as well, and people were being pressured to use the new tunnel. I read somewhere that trucks had found a way to get around the not use the tunnel and therefore not pay a toll, because the toll for trucks is quite high.
Yeah, it's huge. In fact, yeah. I mean, when you look at what it is, you understand that they're going to try to avoid it, I would have thought. And in fact, there was an article again recently that that Victoria was home to two of the priciest toll roads in the country. And
But yeah, well, it should. Trucks. I mean, we tolerate far more from trucks than we should, and of course, people in those. In those inner western suburbs, tolerated, had a miserable time. And they're now saying that things are better because trucks have been banned from some of those roads. Not all of them, but most of them. And they're finding it a revelation. They can actually hear themselves talk, think on the footpath and things like that. So that's great.
Well, the community out there has been fighting for that for years.
But,
of course, the downside of it is that one, it was a promotion by Transurban anyway, who's taking all the toll money. At first, it was supposed to be only Transurban paying, but of course, the government had to fork out billions as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And they got a further 10-year extension on their CityLink contract.
Oh, yes.
Which they've had a number of extensions. I mean, when it was originally signed by Kennett, it was supposed to expire roughly now. But they keep getting extensions because they widened at St Kevin's College one time, and they got an extension for that. And now, because of this, they've got a further extension. So they just keep extending it and making lots of money.
It's quite cute, yes.
Yeah.
The Transurban seems to have this government and all governments well and truly under its thumb, I think. And so the idea that we might be able to, you know, reduce our reliance on roads and trucks and cars seems to be, pretty much impossible. The powers that be that make a mint load of money don't want things to change. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, there was an article which I found fascinating because it opened by saying tunnels, 1 million trips and key milestone. More than 1 million trips have been taken through the 10.2 billion Westgate Tunnel since it opened to motorists in mid-December. But then it goes on to say average daily use of the tunnel expected to take 55,000 to 67,000 vehicles a day by early next decade is averaging less than 22,000 in what has been a relatively slow start for the route. So it's gone from an exciting headline to a slow start.
Yeah, well, I think it'll take a while to build up, and people will finally grit their teeth and decide one more toll is worth it. Particularly if the car's leased or the company they work for pays for the car operations. You know, those sort of things. They'll get round to using it, I guess. But it was meant really for the trucks, of course.
Yeah. Well, they say about 1/5 of the trips have been by trucks. So. Although it's probably relative to the number of to their percentage on the road anyway, I guess.
Yeah, but getting the trucks out of those in a western suburbs, and some of the comments have been quite gratifying from the people who live there about the trucks disappearing off the.
Well, that's a definite positive. Although if the trucks are trying to seek alternatives, where are they going?
Yeah, I don't think it actually specified exactly what devious route there was, but they had a photo of a very long queue of trucks parked up somewhere. And I think it was meant to be, trucks trying to use this devious alternative. But see, that's what happens unless you put, really, really force the trucks to go where you want them. They will try and find a way around things.
Well, that was obviously pretty good because the Transurban Group Executive of Operations, David Clements, said the project had already transformed travel in Melbourne's West, John. So it's exciting news, isn't it?
Ah, oh, dear. Transformation yet again. Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
One of the better performances by public transport over the break, by the way, they're putting new tram stops in North Melbourne for that tram route. But they're not going to be accessible. Now, one would have thought that given they're supposed to have done it by 2022, and now they're talking about 2032, by the way, one would have thought if you're going to spend money putting new tram stops in around the Errol Street and Queensbury Street and Victoria Street for that tram route, why not make them bloody well accessible?
Well, I think they're actually getting accessible trams.
They are. They're accessible trams, but you can't get on them.
No.
Or off them.
Well, off them. I mean, those sort of things go on just being so bizarre. I mean, they're flouting federal government policy that they were supposed to follow, that everything was supposed to be accessible by that back in the year 2022, I think. And, it's just more peculiar. Nothing gets done properly. And so many projects, by the way, once they're underway and they start going over budget, they start cutting back on things they promised to do when the project started. And, of course, they're very quiet about the cutbacks that they never finish.
Well, the department said, this is quite amazing, like, why not do it now? They said the proposed new stop locations and treatments in North Melbourne will set the foundation to build level access stops in the future, but why not do it now?
Well, exactly. Well, it's a case of do you do all these small things that could be done to the present system, or do you lump all the money into some large, spectacular project, which seems to be what the politicians would rather do because they think they'll get more political bang for their buck out of that. But you go on building new bits while you leave the old parts of the system, malingering. And it's like the overhead wire failing for the trains yesterday. You know, why wasn't all the overhead wire renovated for the new service? They spent an absolute fortune on new signalling. But, things like the overhead wires have got to stay up at the same time. So, yeah, it's... goes on being weird, Kevin.
We ask a lot of rhetorical questions on this program, don't we, John?
We do, Kevin. And I, I'm afraid I can see a pattern in the rhetorical answers too.
How many years has it been now we've been doing this?
Yeah.
The Auditor General reported, this is back in November, revealed there was little improvement in tram network accessibility in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And the government will miss another deadline to make the entire tram fleet accessible by 2032. So they missed 22 and now he's saying they're going to miss 32.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I've been involved with these issues for a long time, and they always I've made the point many times. They always used to say it'll be fully accessible in 15 years, and every year it was going to be 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems to be in 10-year slabs.
Oh well, anyway, it's getting shorter.
Yeah, we're getting
shorter.
Better by 5 years. That's right.
we'll be all gone to God by the time it actually happens. By the look of it. But, there's another interesting thing. The Infrastructure Victoria, the independent advisory body on infrastructure, which, of course, covers transport, they've said that the city loop still needs untangling. And I agree. That's something I've been pushing for at least the last decade. That if you... you don't have to spend a huge amount of money, maybe $1 billion, on the underground loop, to stop it being a loop and turn it into cross city rail lines instead, and you double the capacity of the loop. And if they'd done that first, my question would be, well, did they actually really need to build the metro rail line? Because they would have got so much extra capacity out of the existing loop. But, it's too late now. We've got the metro tunnel, but this actually saying that that a lot more capacity could be got out of the City Loop system. And I agree.
But then you wouldn't have this great underground Escher complex going on.
No, it's not a big enough project, John.
No, no, no. Not enough, not enough, not enough things to go wrong.
But getting,
it is a bit like Escher, isn't it? Yeah.
Speaking of moving in a massively fast rate, the new Mikey system where people can
use bank cards
and phones, it's still coming.
Yeah.
And they're going to let public servants are going to be the first to test the new scanners. And then they're going to try it on a few lines.
Right.
But so it's still coming, John. We keep pointing out that other cities seem to have it and it works very well. We can't seem to get it right.
Apparently, I don't know that it's difficult to institute in Melbourne because of our complicated fare system. Our fare system. I mean, I don't know why they just don't make a flat fare of say a dollar and just, you know, charge a dollar for every trip and 50 cents for concessions or something like that. And that would make life a whole lot easier for the poor wretched computers that are trying to make things work in the background.
Yeah, and of course it's going to be trains, but it's going to be progressively rolled out across a handful of train lines, which have yet to be confirmed. But also, it won't be available originally on trams and buses.
It'll be a lot of confusion there, of course.
It just seems to be going on and on.
Well, it's on and on. Yeah. Well, that's right. Well, whereas other cities. Done it years ago. Sydney's had it for years.
Yeah, well, it says that, you know, thousands more readers will need to be installed and tested on trams and buses before the next phase of contactless travel can be unveiled. It's unclear how long the entire scope of the upgrade will take to roll out across all rail lines and other transport. It's just going on and on.
Yep. It's Perth managed to institute it, I think, a year or so ago with for very little money, and they've got a complex system of trains and buses. They could do it. I think even Brisbane's doing it.
Even Brisbane.
Yeah.
Let's hope not.
Melbourne reigns supreme for complexity and difficulty.
Right. And also, on this morning's Brekkie show, there was an interview with a woman who's involved with a campaign in Merribeck for better bus services. She was making the point that there's still a number of bus services around Merribeck and not just there, all over Melbourne, of course. But they still don't even run on a Sunday. I mean, it's just, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. They don't seem prepared to institute a basic standard of service, you know, that is required on every bus route. So you get these variations, and buses that stop at 8 or 9 o'clock at night don't keep running until 11 or 12. And the same at the weekend. Some will run on Saturdays and not Sundays. And some won't run at all on the weekends. And, oh, God, it's all so complex. I've got a... There's a new bus route being started that I think is about 80% good and about 20% ridiculous. It's called the 241, and it starts at North Melbourne Station now. And I think it's a replacement for that shuttle that used to run between North Melbourne
and the uni.
Now that the rail gives you that journey quickly, you know, from Footscray to Arden to Parkville, I think that service has been taken out, and this new 241 has gone in, and so it goes North Melbourne Station, Arden Station, then along Queensbury Street through North Melbourne, and then zags up to Elgin Street and Johnson Street, so it. It's a very good route cutting across through the inner northern suburbs, and it crosses a lot of other bus services and, of course, tram services on the north-south route. and the bus is going to run every 10 minutes all day, which is really good. So it should be a really useful service, I think. But when it gets to the other end, it just terminates halfway up the hill on Studley Park Road from Collingwood to Kew Junction. So rather than going an extra 2 kilometres to Kew Junction, where it can connect with more buses and more trams, it's just going to sort of stop in the middle of nowhere. And it's convenient operationally to stop it where they're stopping it, but it's not convenient for the users.
Is it convenient because it's easy to turn around there or something?
Yes, that's right. It's easy for the buses to do a loop round and come back, so that's nice. But it's dumping people there if they're on the bus thinking, oh, yeah, I'm sure this will go through the Kew Junction. No, it doesn't. So then I don't know how they're supposed to, they're supposed to then wait for another bus.
Well, you wait for the next one, and then, buses come in groups together, and then you wait a long time for the next one, yeah.
So, it's got the basis of a good, very, very useful bus service because of the way it connects the west to the east, without going through the city. And it crosses so many tram lines and so many north-south bus services as well. It's really good. But this sort of terminating in the middle of nowhere in the east is just, in my view, just it's stupid. Really stupid.
Why go for good when you can do good enough, John?
It's what it looks like, and you think it. You wonder whether it's being set up to fail at some. We didn't get enough usage on that service, so they cut it out or they cut it back.
Well, we're just about out of time, John. So we're finishing up in our usual way. We're cheering people up no end as usual.
Well, look, what can we say? Yeah.
Well, we've said it all, I think.
find your little bit of the public transport system. Find the best, the best rail and tram and bus, combo that works for you, and keep your head down and don't look up at the bigger picture.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, good to speak with you in the new year again, John.
Yes, here we go. Yes.
Okay, John, we'll do it again next month.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thanks, folks.
Right, bye-bye. Yeah. John McPherson there, who's our, as you can tell, our regular commentator on transport. And next week, of course, we're doing energy issues and...
Energy.
Yeah, well, I've got absolutely no idea what we're doing. We'll do it next week.
I'm sure we'll have lots of energy for that one.
And Ed, thanks for doing wonderful work keeping us on
back.
Air.
Good to be back. Good to see you again, Kevin.
And you too, Anne. Last time we met, last time we spoke was the coffee lounge next door, wasn't it?
It was. Well, if I say so myself, I think the world needs city limits.